Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Deadly Days, Tales of Dark Fantasy. I'm your host, Joe Bandel, and today is episode number 55. So we're moving right along. Today's episode is also from a magazine I translated called Cocaine. I translated that magazine for Sidereel Press as a limited edition. So you can't get that copy. They've been sold out a long time ago. However, I have a lot of stories that I have translated and published, both short stories and novels. And you can find them online. Go to BandelBooks.com. Bandel is band like a rock and roll band. Bandel, B-A-N-D-E-L, BandelBooks.com. And I'm setting that up as a place with links to just about everything that you need to know, that you need to find out. So feel free to go there and feel free to be a support. I encourage people to support my work of translating these stories. Find out what's available. Check out some of the offerings that I have there. And there's going to be more added as things goes by. In the meantime, we're just going to start. This is a story called The Inspired Poet by Fritz Bauer. Shortly after the poet got married, he considered where he should live with his wife. His profession turned out to be not very lucrative for several reasons. The first was the poet's mood would disintegrate into nothing when the worries of the day pressed in on him. And the worries of the day pressed in on him daily. The second, no less important, reason was that his mood was not as consistent as his worries. Finally, the third and most important, all things considered, lay in the fundamentally negative attitude of the publishers. The poet had never owned money, a real amount of money. He understood, by the way, much less of the real value of money than an astronomer knew of astronomy. His wife was in no way second to him, because she shared his world and view of life unconditionally. As people of culture, they furnished their dwelling with items of significance and taste, which they promised to pay for in the near future. And until then, they counted upon the patronage of goodwill of all those they owed money to. Yet while the goodwill continued, the creditors soon wanted their money. And in the same measure, as the goodwill continued, the number of creditors increased. One became three, six, ten, and among them were all the trades and guilds. The poet kept conscientious records of everything. Then one day, as if by appointment, six creditors appeared at the same time to assert their claims. The poet determined that four were still missing, and he asked the gentleman to return when they could all be present. But the gentleman protested, and almost every one of them insisted on the return of the items which they had supplied. The book dealer reached for all 30 volumes of Goethe with one hand, and the piano salesman attempted to seize the grand piano. Only the grocer had nothing to grab and stood there indignantly. The poet calmed them down with soft, mild words, declaring that he did not understand what all the fuss was about. He wanted to pay but did not have any money. The gentleman must certainly be able to differentiate between good and bad intentions, and he was passionate that his were entirely good. In this manner, he managed to appease his oppressors, but not without swearing an oath that he would soon put all his affairs in order. At the same time, the poet remained upset, even after the creditors had left. He became thoughtful and even pondered a plan to perhaps turn to an honest profession. But his wife fanatically believed in his higher calling and implored him to remain on the course that was natural to him. The poet loved his wife and promised her this. So now that the most important goals in life had been agreed upon, and since he, like his wife, was prone to moods, they agreed to give this evening a festive character. However, the grocer, bearing in mind the recent moment of danger when the piano salesman was about to reclaim his piano, refused any further credit. After the poet heard this, he decided to pray that night and then go to bed. He opened the window wide, lit a candle, took his wife by the hand, and led her to the grand piano. A few minor chords, some preludes, and then the music of an unknown master moved in gentle waves. Perhaps it was even their own inspiration, brought out of their intimate, pure mood, a spiritualized contemplation expressed in music. This prayer may have lasted a long time. The two players lost themselves in eternity. The street was empty of people, and only the moon and the stars listened with devotion. The next morning, the poet received a letter with the following content. Our publishing house is interested in the manuscript you sent us. We are thinking of publishing the first volume of novellas this autumn and are forwarding you an advance payment of 1,000 gold marks. From that moment on, the poet began to believe in himself more seriously than ever and firmly rejected all thoughts related to any other occupation. His wife saw him as a rising meteor that outshone all earthly things. Regarding the amount of the advance, they were both in agreement to conscientiously divide it among the 10 creditors and put their affairs in order. The poet sat down and wrote a letter to all of them. I wrote words of sacred insights and hours of inner contemplation. A refined worldview speaks out of my book, which will appear this autumn. In the meantime, my publisher has forwarded me an advance of 1,000 gold marks. I have a deeply felt need to share this with my revered patrons, which is why I ask you to pick up the portion of your share in my apartment. That same day, the postman appeared and delivered the money. The poet and his wife weighed and counted it repeatedly. Then he went into town and bought her a ring of pure gold. Meanwhile, she went to the hairdresser and had her hair shortened to that of a boy. They wandered together through the streets, arm in arm, with God in their hearts, and gave to the poor and the crippled. They sensed the contrast between the divine peace in their hearts and their outer clothing, so she bought a robe of soft, supple silk, which shimmered and flowed down the figure of the young woman, transforming her into a lady of the world, and with a singular, piquant charm. And that evening, as they took their meal on the terrace of an exclusive Ringstrasse hotel, the poet was overcome with the beauty of life and bought his wife a basket of the most beautiful flowers. A fleeting consideration sufficed to come up with the plan to travel on the evening express train to a fashionable health spa. When they took breakfast the next morning, in the pine-scented air and the ethereal blue, they thought they were in Elysium, drinking nectar, and decided to linger there, feeling that they should celebrate each moment as it happened. Meanwhile, the inevitable happened. The 10 creditors saw the letter of the poet as a very bad joke, and each of the gentlemen took back what belonged to them. The piano salesman, the bookseller, carpet and furniture retailer, and everyone else trashed the poet's home and took everything they could. Only the grocer went home empty-handed. He was inherently at a disadvantage compared to his peers. Shortly after that, the poet discovered that he had just enough money to buy 2 return travel tickets. Inwardly balanced, reconciled to God and people, he did not feel earthly concerns. He lost himself in the atmosphere and floated above the world. "Helen," he said to his wife, "now the purpose of all earthly torment is clear to me. Come, let us travel back to our home, to our Olympus on earth. I feel the power within me to create works of immortality." But Olympus was profaned. Greedy people had destroyed all that was divine and had left behind a desert full of dreariness, unworthiness, and desolation. The poet was unable to grasp the justice in this. He felt that the smallest remainder of his humanity was about to disappear. Imagined himself standing there, exposed to the ridicule of everyone. "People are without mercy, Helen," he said. "We will leave them. We will live in the forest among the predators." And in the middle of the night, the poet and his wife left the destroyed Olympus. He who did not get from people what he deserved, he who had given them more in one instant of the inspired creation than they could have given him in a century's worth of junk. Now that is a strange story, and makes me think about my own story. It makes me think about the world that we live in, and it makes me think about something that my grandfather used to say about being so heavenly bound, you're no earthly good. I think there needs to be a balance somehow between physical reality that we live in and our spiritual worlds that we live in as well. Anyway, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed that story. Till next week, thank you.